Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Good morning and welcome everyone to Women Leading the Way Radio, brought to you today by Connected Women of Influence. I am Deanna Potter, your host for today's radio show, Sassy Sales and Business Development. And today with me is our leading lady, Anne-Marie Hoftaling. Welcome, Anne-Marie. I'm so happy to have you with us today.
Well, thank you very much. I am so very happy to be speaking with you today.
So Anne-Marie is a powerhouse author, speaker, performer, and change agent, and she's here to talk to us today about a tremendous movement that she started. It's called the Millionaire Girls Movement, and I'm thrilled to be hearing more about it. It is such a tremendous thing that you're bringing forth to the world, and the amazing part for me is that I did some studies and some research and read some statistics before inviting you here. And currently today, women hold 4.6% of the Fortune 500 CEO positions, and are only 15% of the American millionaires are self-made women in the world. That is shocking to me and makes me tremendously sad. Tell me how statistics like that may have played a role in just kind of causing you to get this fire in your belly, and what, you know, brought you to creating this Millionaire Girls Movement. What's it all about, and how did it come to fruition?
Yeah, it was very much sort of twofold. It was knowing all of the data and then having my own personal experience with working with women and seeing these economic gaps sort of transpire in various ways, shapes, and form. And so a couple of years ago, we started talking about providing high-quality information and resources to women, women who've made it. You know, I've interviewed people like Katrina DeMarkoff from Vogue Chocolate and Jenny Craig and women like that. So it was really about, okay, let's interview women who've made it, but also have other women like attorneys talk about prenuptial agreements and trust and all these very unsexy things that women don't necessarily love talking about, but that are really compromising the sort of economic landscape and equity. And so it really began as this sort of effort to just provide free content and free information. And we started doing some events, and we got a lot of women there and a lot of women talking. And then it evolved, because my background is sales and business development, and I was also doing a lot of salary negotiation work, I started seeing this real struggle with women in negotiation, and not women you would expect to have these issues. High-powered women, women on their way to partnership, entrepreneurial women. And what happened was I thought, you know what, we need to really start talking about in a much more open way the fact that we're kind of architecting our own glass ceilings, that we are getting in our own way, and we need to be able to negotiate our worth in the marketplace. And that really is where the documentary we're working on, Architecting Our Own Glass Ceilings, came into play, because, getting back to the Millionaire Girls Movement, what we know is when women do not negotiate for their worth over the course of their career, they will lose about $1 million.
Wow. Okay, so we got to stop right there because I'm intrigued by so much of what you just said, and we've only been on 2 whole minutes. So tell me, why on earth do we have such a problem as women for negotiating what our worth is, our value? What is the big block? What's the common thread that you saw the most of?
So there are a couple of things going on, and I would also like to say, because I know that you all work with a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm an entrepreneur myself, and one of the things that is important to understand is there's been research done that even in the entrepreneurial world where we can set our own price, we price ourselves below market value. So this isn't just unique to asking for salary negotiations. And a lot of this is cultural. There's a lot of sense of women should feel grateful for what they've earned, that we don't want to be perceived as aggressive or, you know, we'll be perceived as bitch if we advocate for ourselves, that the belief system that if we work hard, that it's an equitable system and we will be rewarded fairly. And that's just not true. The truth of the matter is we do not always get what we've earned. We get what we've negotiated. So you may deserve more, but if you haven't negotiated for more, you may not be getting it. And I think that there's a lot of play both in the corporate environment, but even in, you know, I've worked with plenty of entrepreneurs who are giving away their services, discounting their services, and compromising their own financial needs in this self-sacrificing way that isn't really serving them. So a lot of it is a cultural context, and quite frankly, we haven't had as long of a tradition of self-advocacy in the workplace. Even though we've been in the workforce, we haven't been practicing or sharing that work for as long as men have.
Oh, I love that piece. And I'll tell you, I've heard before that piece of, you know, we don't get what we've earned, we get what we've negotiated. But I've never thought about it from a standpoint of we just haven't been doing it as long. You know, and I think a lot of us are very familiar with the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. And she talks about how, you know, we need to get better at sitting up and leaning in at the executive tables. And we need the men to stand up and sit, lean in at the family tables, the breakfast tables, the dinner tables. We've been doing that a lot longer than the men have, but we haven't necessarily been doing it, you know, in the business world as much. So such a great point. So so I guess the question is, do you believe that this inequality is in the professional world is existent strictly because of the environment we're in, or do you believe that a good percentage of it is self-imposed by us?
I think it's a combination. I mean, I want to be incredibly clear. This isn't a blame game. This isn't women's fault. It's merely an observation that we haven't really robustly developed this muscle and we need to. Having said that, is there still bias? Absolutely. There's plenty of studies on bias. There's still, you know, plenty of bias still exists. But for me, from the work I do, I can't control or impact that in the way that I can control and impact a woman's capacity to self-advocate. We all have control over that piece. So for me, this is the corner of the world in this equation that I really want to contribute to. If I can help women figure out this piece and how they proceed through the world, then I feel like I've made a meaningful impact. There's lots of policy in the world. There's lots of access now. We're occupying 50% or more of undergraduate institutions and law schools, but we're still falling out and bottoming out when it comes to pay equity. I can't control all of it or contribute to all of it, but this piece of empowering women individually, I feel like I can make a meaningful impact.
Excellent. Tell me, when you reached out to some of these high-performance women, what was their willingness to get involved? Did you find that they were open to participation and serving as role models and getting involved, or did you find that some were and some weren't?
Yeah, this is a great question, because my joke about doing this was when I said, oh, I'm going to interview women who are going to talk about, you know, so everybody knows that they're not alone and that, you know, these really high-powered women have blown it too. And somebody said to me, you're not going to find anybody to talk about it. And like a day later, I was like, oh, yeah, that's true. Who would talk about that? And I was really shocked. I talked to CEOs and I talked to partners at very, you know, established law firms like McKenna Long. And when I reached out to them, they said, yeah, absolutely. How soon can we film this? And their dialogue offline, you know, that you won't necessarily see in the film is that they really wanted to be able to talk about this out loud because they themselves are still struggling with the issue, even though the perception by the world is that they've made it. And they feel like there isn't enough education and transparent discussion. There's so much pressure to fake it till you make it that nobody sort of says, you know what, I think I'm being way underpaid or I'm not asking for my worth and I don't know what to do. It's very hard to have that discussion, honestly. And the truth of the matter is, even though Sheryl Sandberg wrote Lean In, she also says, listen, I was going to accept the first offer from Facebook, and it was my husband and brother that told me to go back and negotiate for a higher number. Now, you know, if we're all looking at Sheryl Sandberg as sort of the beacon of the capacity to negotiate, if she can't do it and her instinct isn't to do it, then who are we to be wanting to do it, right? I mean, that makes damn hard. And it is hard, but I think that it can be done.
Yes, Great point. Great point. Now, you talk a lot about mentoring. I know you've got a post right now on your website, millionairesgirlsmovement.com. And tell me a little bit about your opinion on mentoring, and do you think that it's harder for us as women to find mentors compared to men?
You know, it's interesting. I think that what I have seen is there's a lot of collaboration of women. There are lots of women's organizations now. There are lots of places for us to sort of come together. I think that real kind of mentorship and sponsorship, where somebody comes to another woman and says, hey, I don't know how to negotiate this fee structure. I feel like I'm in the deep end of the ocean on this. I think there is less structure around that because, again, we don't have as long of a tradition. I've done a lot of work with CEO groups and CEO forums. Largely the people sitting at those tables are men. And I can tell you that there's a transference of knowledge in a very real kind of structured way about processing various business decisions and issues. And I think that we're still struggling to figure that part out. And I into that, you know, women are still doing most of the work at home. And so they have these other components to manage in these higher powered positions and how to integrate their professional and personal lives and being able to talk about that too, not just these isolated, how to make more, do more, get more on the business side, but how do you do all of that while you're raising a family?
So two questions come out of that for me. First off, do you think that women still feel the need to separate and isolate the fact that they are, quote-unquote, women, mothers, wives, and not bring that part of their lives into business? Or do you think that we're getting to a point where we can feel more open, more comfortable to be able to let that kind of leak into our professional world?
I think it's still an enormous struggle. I think in the corporate executive kind of world and the professional service provider world, accounting firms, law firms, where I spend a lot of my time, I think that women feel like they can't even say they have children. You know, they're sort of like, they don't even mention that they're taking the day off because their kid is sick or whatever. They will try to mitigate all of that. I think that we've seen lots of advancement in that, but I think there's still a lot of very real and very relevant fear and anxiety over that. I don't think it's irrational. I think it's very real. I think there's a lot of when a woman gets pregnant that she's not going to produce as much or as well or for as long. So those things are very real, and that bias is very alive and well. Having said that, I think we're seeing a lot of women break off through those traditional structures and create their own path, people like myself, where I really built an entire business based on my value system and my ability to be a single mom and take care of my children and my own mother. And so I think that there is more flexibility in the marketplace to choose your own path and architect your own path. But I think in the current structures that exist, there is still a great deal of fear and anxiety and tension about allowing yourself to be your full human self in those spaces.
Sure.
Without any, without any repercussions.
Yeah, okay. My other question, which is a little different, you mentioned the words mentorship and sponsorship. Is there a difference between what you mean by those two definitions, or are they ultimately the same? What is what does sponsorship mean versus mentorship?
Yeah, I think there is a difference. I think mentorship is sort of having a go-to person where they're happy to share knowledge with you, they're happy to give you some guidance and support. I think of sponsorship as somebody who's advocating for you, somebody who is really leading you, who's connecting you, who's more invested in the outcome. They're very different roles, I think. And I think there's a lot more mentorship among women and a lot less sponsorship. And part of that is, again, the tradition. And I think, this is going to be a really reactive statement to make, but I can say as much of this work as I do, as much as I'm out there, I've still experienced stuff where I'll reach out to somebody and say, hey, I'm trying to figure this piece out. And they sort of feel like, you know what, you're established enough. I'm not going to share that with you. And so I find that still very frustrating myself. And I've had plenty of women articulate that to me. I think there's still kind of a scarcity mentality for opportunity that prevents us from really deeply connecting one another and helping one another advance. In my view, more is simply more. And the more we share, the more there's plenty. There's plenty for all of us. So,
yeah. How do we break through? I mean, is it a matter of just continuing to find other women who don't share that kind of attitude or mentality around sharing and supporting? Or is it just being role models ourselves by continuing to walk that walk? Or is it a little bit of both? I mean, I too have ran into that situation. You know, you kind of throw the net out there and you hope that you run into, you pray when you approach that particular person that they aren't that type kind of person, that they don't have that attitude. And sometimes you just run into that barrier. How do we start to kind of, you know, change that or hope to impact that as professional women?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I've this year put together a high-level executive group that I'm running very, very differently than I see in the marketplace, where people are very much invested in one another's advancement. And so I've done that with great deliberation, not merely for my business, but because I'm trying to create a cultural shift that I think is really significant. As individuals, I think that what we have to do is we have to actively seek ways of extending ourselves for people and figuring out, not mindlessly, I mean, I'm not going to make a connection for somebody I barely know or for somebody that I don't know the quality of their work or their work is questionable. You know, we're presuming that this is all with people that you have some, you know, investment in and you know the quality of their work. But I think that we do have to model that behavior, and I think that we do have to let go of this notion that by sharing really valuable information, it will somehow lessen our opportunity in the world. It's really shifting our own belief system first. We can't change the behavior until we shift our own belief system around what it all means.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to take a really quick break real quick because I would love the opportunity so that we can take and recognize our sponsors. I'm going to hand things over to our producer for a moment. We're going to sit tight.
Just wanted to say thank you to one of our Connected Women of Influence sponsors, DeborahSimpson.com. Deborah Simpson basically came from McGraw-Hill, and her specialty is to speak throughout Southern California to small business organizations on the many ways a business can present itself on the World Wide Web. So she teaches low-cost, no-cost forms of marketing business to the online community, helping businesses increase their business visibility and driving traffic to websites, all while creating passive income through the sale of information products. We want to say thank you to Deborah Simpson for being one of our wonderful sponsors to Connected and Women of Influence. And now back to you, Deanna.
Welcome back, and yes, I'm Deanna Potter. I'm your show host for Sassy Sales and Business Development. Our topic today is A Million Ways to Earn Your Million, and I am with our leading lady, Anne-Marie Hoftaling. And just in case our listeners may want to reach you after our show, Anne-Marie, how would you like our listeners to contact you?
They can certainly email me at am@thehoftalinggroup.com, which is a very long email address, but that's what it is. Or they can actually just give me a call at 619-370-4376.
Wonderful, wonderful. I have tons of admiration for you. I often tease you and say, when I grow up, I want to be just like you. And I think that this movement is so important for so many different reasons. One of the things that I struggle with when I myself am working with some of my clients and they're in an executive role or in the corporate environment is, you know, there is that piece of, as women in business and sitting amongst, team projects and things like that, we have different sets of skills as individuals, but I also think that sometimes they wonder, what can I do different with my set of skills as women? What do you find in your experience when it comes to men? What kind of skills do they typically apply better in business, would you find, compared to maybe women? And what skills do women apply better from your experience?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I would say that, you know, skill-wise, I get nervous about that gender divide. What I would say that I see the divide where it compromises things is I think that men are really great at sort of confidently placing themselves at the table and moving forward. And there's, by the way, plenty of research on the fact that men will say, yeah, we can do that. And then they sort of rise to the occasion. They will go forward and kind of rise to the occasion and make it happen. Women want to be really certain before they put themselves out there. And I think that that limits a lot of opportunity for us, because if we're waiting to be credible, if we're waiting to get all of the information, gather the skill, it can really create some lost opportunity. I think that women, you know, when we get into these, what do women do better, men do better, I think it gets a little difficult for me, because I think that people are individuals by and large, and, you know, I'm great at some technical things and not at others. I don't think that has anything to do with my being a woman. I think that just has to do with what interests me and what, you know, matters to me. I think probably, you know, women are great at collaborating, that sort of thing. Women are probably a little better at sort of being more everyone's contribution at the table, that in recognizing people, probably. But I think that those are really broad things, and I'm a little nervous about dividing that quite so much.
Okay, yeah, totally makes sense. Is there one particular thing that you think women in business this year could do to really see a marked improvement in their professional path?
Yeah, unquestionably, it's the capacity to negotiate for yourself and self-advocate. And it's not just about money. I think it's about opportunity. I think it's about recognition. I mean, even if it's in your own home, I mean, if you're doing, you know, two-thirds of the housework and you're, it's making sure that your teenage children are contributing. It's really everywhere that you negotiate the terms of your life a little bit better. And I would say that combined with sort of mitigating all of this guilt we feel that we're not doing anything well enough, we're not doing our job well enough at home, we're not doing our job, but really letting go of that guilt and sort of just kind of sitting in the fact that you need help and you reach out to those who can do that work for you. Say, once you really figure out how to walk through basic kind of negotiations, like I said, not even high-stakes negotiations like salaries, but even smaller-stake ones where you can sit down with, you know, a potential person and say, hey, listen, I would really like to sit through that presentation with you, or I would really like to know what I need to do to create this particular opportunity for myself. No one thing is going to advance your career more than that. If you don't have that capacity, you're always going to be held hostage by those who are going to reward you or not. It becomes a system of, hey, hopefully I get noticed, and that's a really, really passive model versus I'm going to actively engage and be an agent of my own success.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I am amazed at times on when I interact with friends, colleagues, you know, clients, and it's come down to the little things about, you know what, this Saturday, mom's going to go get herself a massage without feeling that she's being selfish. That word selfish is such a powerful word. And I think to myself, I must be a real selfish person, because I think to myself, heck no, man, I deserve that massage. And I'm shocked at how many wonderful women really get caught up in that. And it's an amazing thing. It's remarkable to me. So back to Millionaire Girls Movement. You have a goal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Were you going to say something? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you have a goal here on your website, and it says 1 million women, 1 million millionaires. Talk to me about just time frames and projections. Where do you start with such a goal that large? And where's the vision for the movement when you start that first one?
Yeah. For us, you know, here's the truth of the matter. Lots of professional women have, over the course of their career, certainly earned $1 million. And where does it go? It gets lost in a divorce, or, you know, at Nordstrom's, or who knows? Flies away. And so for us, really, it was a bold statement for women to self-commit. That's what we're really looking for. I'm not out there, you know, calculating with a calculator how many women are coming along. We certainly have some really nice women who've hit kind of that million dollar mark and shared those stories with us. But more critically to me is this holistic education about sort of growing, sustaining, and earning your own sort of piece of the pie. And so where we begin for us is education. You know, how do you teach women to earn? How do you teach them to grow it and sustain it? And so our focus is really on delivering high-quality content on those issues so that women can start making better decisions individually for themselves. Because I do firmly believe, you know, not unlike all of sort of the work we've seen, that when women do well, the world care about community, we care about education, we care about social justice. And so I don't see this as this selfish act, like, oh, I'm going to make $1 million for me. I believe firmly that when we close that $1 million gap, women will be doing much more and contributing at a greater level, and there will be a greater world in which we live in. I believe that deeply.
And the membership is absolutely free, correct?
Correct. We don't require anything. We don't sell you anything. That's another thing that's really important to me. I don't sell anything on MGM. We provide information. We provide interviews of lots of service providers and lots of people who've made it to sort of provide just raw education. We're not interested in sort of making money off of those people. You know, at some point in time, it may become unsustainable for me to do that, but it will never be, we're not selling to people. That's not really what we're doing. So they're not going to get a ton of emails for products that we're trying to sell. That's not really what we're there to do. We're there to give.
Wonderful. Well, I love it. I love the idea. And, you know, you use the term cultural shift. And I think that's what this is all about. And I know that for me, the big aha was the idea that, you know, we're kind of, yeah, we're new to the game. We're new to the coming up to the table. We haven't been doing this quite as long when you look back over history as professionals in the workplace. But boy, oh boy, are we going to, you know, catch up real quick. And I know that. And I think that you being such a powerful leader and a great example of what we can do as women is just a blessing to us. And I'm so grateful for what you're doing and all of the individuals and the inspirations that you're bringing together. I can't thank you enough. And you know what? Give us one more time your contact information so that people can find out more about the movement, and in case they have any questions about what you do as a coach and as a change leader, as an author and a speaker, and how they can follow up with you. So please, your email and your phone number again.
Yes, my email is am@thehofftailinggroup.com, and my phone number is 619-370-4376, and thank you so very much for having me and having this platform to share the information. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And that's our show for today. This is Deanna Potter. And again, my last name is Potter. No relation to Harry, but hopefully you've learned some magic about business today. And the name of our show is Sassy Sales and Business Development. Special thanks to our listeners, and we'll be back again next Monday morning for another Women Leading the Way radio show. I hope that you have a fabulous week, and thanks again for listening in. It is our goal to bring you powerful information through Women Leading the Way radio, and we thank you very much for joining us. Anne-Marie, have a great day. Thank you for taking the time again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.